Okay, it's good to see everybody. It's a little bit after 5 o'clock, so it's time for us to get started. Let's start with roll call.
Chairman McMillan.
Here.
Commissioner Hollinsworth.
Here.
Commissioner Herbst.
Here.
Commissioner Duffy.
Here.
Commissioner Reynolds.
Here.
Commissioner Tussin.
Here.
Vice Chair Campbell's excuse. Thank you.
Okay, we have a speaker with us tonight. Speaker, Steve?
Hi, Steve, yeah.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Hollier.
Well, welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear what you have to say to us.
Good. Where would you like me to sit or stand?
Wherever you feel comfortable.
Why don't I just go down to the end of the table where I can see all of you? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Okay, well, good evening, Mr. Chair and board members. My name is Steve Pollier, and my wife and I have lived in Oro Valley for 12 years. For purposes of transparency, you should know I am an active golfer at El Conquistador, and I'm on the Men's Golf Association board and serve as its events coordinator. My comments this evening represent my own personal opinion and nobody else's. After watching several of the town's meetings regarding golf, I have come to a conclusion. The Oro Valley Water Utility and the Friends of Golf need each other. Here's why. The Water Utility needs the efforts of those who support the continuance of golf and recognize its unintended consequences if it is not. As you can see, the unrelenting pressure and focus on facts is beginning to make a difference. Without this passionate support from concerned residents, we may end up with no or reduced golf, and that is a problem for the utility. Your director has already said that the loss of 36 holes of golf will create a $480,000 revenue problem. Reducing to 18 holes will create a somewhat smaller issue. As I understand the problem, much of it is tied to the bond issue to fund the piping infrastructure to carry reclaimed water to golf courses and a few other users. You have already lost Vistoso. You are possibly on the verge of losing the Conquistador, Kenyatta, and Push Ridge courses. In my language, that means you will have a largely stranded investment. Unless golf is saved, you will be forced to increase rates either by adding a buck or two per month to residential users or hitting your remaining reclaimed water customers with a major price increase. Neither is a good place to be. On the flip side of the coin, those who favor golf really need your help. Last Wednesday, the mayor said he would endorse a 36-hole plan if the sales tax subsidy could be reduced to $750,000, and he proposed a set of terms and conditions to go along with that. I believe we can get close to that number, but we need financial assistance from the water utility to put us over the top. I believe an annual $100,000 sales credit, indexed for inflation, is appropriate until the bond is retired. At that point, rates should be permanently reduced in accordance with your standard pricing formula. You have the means to support this $100,000 credit without financial stress. Your reserve account has a balance of more than $6 million. Today, the community center courses and Push Ridge are paying a significant premium versus the 5 municipal courses in Dayton. I'd like to share some information with you. This comes from Greg Jackson, who's the deputy director of Tucson Parks and Rec. Those 5 courses represent 90 holes, 530 irrigated acres. Including a $457,000 credit for the Randolph Complex and literally free water at Silverbell, the cost per irrigated acre, hold this number in mind if you will, is $1,697. The comparable cost per acre for the 45 holes of town golf is $4,338. That number comes from the club management. If Oro Valley had Tucson water pricing, the course would save annually $426,000. So, you have a choice to make. risk losing your best reclaimed water customer and having to make up to $480,000, or provide a $100,000 credit for the remaining years the bond is on the books. Will you help us? Will you hinder us? The choice is yours. Please make the right one. Thank you very much for your time and attention. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, let's go on to our first agenda item, review and approval of the August 12th, 2019 regular session meeting minutes. Do you have any comments on the minutes? Any motion on the minutes?
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to move to approve in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes. And two, discussion on Oro Valley Water Utility Development Impact Fee Analysis.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Abraham.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. Well, this is something we haven't talked about for a while. This is something we go through about every 5 years, and that's a review of our development impact fees. My presentation tonight, we're going to hit a very, very high level. We're in the process of doing this review now, and we're just going to, you know, some of you folks I know are veterans of this, some of you are new to it, so we're going to have a couple presentations on this probably in the next 3 or 4 months. So what are impact fees? Impact fees are a charge or assessment imposed by a political subdivision against a new development in order to generate revenue for funding or recouping the costs of capital improvements or facility expansions necessitated by and attributable to the new development. For the water utility, the impact fees are paid at the time a water meter is purchased, but not before a building permit is issued. And I say that just in the Arizona Revised Statute, there's some important phraseology, and that was one of them. So impact fees, an overview. The Arizona Development Fee Enabling Legislation, it's the Arizona Revised Statute, and this legislation governs how fees are calculated for municipalities in Arizona. Necessary public services. Impact fees may only be used for construction of public facilities that are necessary for public services. Facilities must have a life expectancy of 3 years or more and be owned and operated on behalf of the municipality. An infrastructure improvement plan, we call this an IIP. It's a written plan and identifies each facility to be funded by the proposed development impact fees. Qualified professionals. The infrastructure improvement plan must be developed by quote unquote qualified professionals using generally accepted engineering and planning practices. For example, qualified professionals to either engineering firms or financial firms, but people that are well versed in the statute, the law, and have done these kind of this kind of analysis before and have a proven track record. For our current impact fee analysis, Tischler Weiss is the impact fee consultant for the town. The water utility impact fee analysis is being aggregated into the town's overall impact fee analysis for parks, streets, and police. So this is a new experience for us. Traditionally in the past, the water utility has gone out with their own consultants for an impact fee analysis. So this time we're aggregating our impact fee analysis with the town's other impact fee analysis with the same consultant. The impact fee methodology, calculating impact fees involves two main steps. One, determining the cost of development related capital improvements, so how much is it going to cost to build the infrastructure you need to build to support the growth, and allocating those costs equitably to various types of development. There's three basic methods for calculating impact fees. One is cost recovery, and that's for past improvements. One is what's called incremental expansion, and and that's concurrent improvements and plan-based for future improvements. This is the methodology the water utility uses, is we come up with an infrastructure improvement plan that's required to support the growth. We come up with engineering estimates, so we have an IIP, cost estimates, and then we build an impact fee around those future improvements. Impact fee funds. Use of impact fees are regulated by Arizona statute. This is very important. Monies received from development impact fees shall be placed in a separate fund and accounted for separately and may be used for the purposes authorized by the statute. So when we collect these impact fees, they don't go into just our operating fund. They go into a very specific fund. Every year it's audited. Auditors compare how many meters we've sold times the impact fee. Is that how much money is in the fund? Then it better be that way. So the water utility, we have two impact fee funds. One of them we call our Alternative Water Resources Development Impact Fee Fund, or our AWRDIF. This is the management of impact fees collected for the development of renewable sources of water supply and any infrastructure required for delivery of those sources. Example, Central Arizona Project Water Improvements. The other impact fee fund we have is the Potable Water System Development Impact Fee Fund, or PWSDIF. This fund is the management of these impact fees that's collected for the expansion-related projects for new growth, future wells, booster stations, reservoirs, and other infrastructure required for growth. So, one, alternative water resources. That's sources of supply other than groundwater. You know, like I said, CAP water. And then pot water, our PWSDIF impact fee fund. That's, you know, the infrastructure for growth. That's, for example, say within our existing system, say if we're going to grow in a certain area, we need to build a reservoir, we need to build a booster station to get that water to the reservoir to support that growth. So two different impact fee funds. We collect both these funds at the same time when we sell a new meter, and I'll show you that in the next slide here. The slide after this one, I'll show you. So here's an example of our Infrastructure Improvement Plan, or IIP. This is in draft form. And one of the reasons it's in draft form is while we're in the process of doing this impact fee analysis, we're also in the process of really looking at our numbers, making sure they're accurate, making sure the projects are what we need to have to support their growth. In our Alternative Water Resource Development Impact Fee Fund, a lot of those projects are our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System, NWRRDS. That's most of what's going to impact the Alternative Water Impact Fee Fund. So I've listed some projects here. We have our partnered projects, and that's our partnership with Metro Water and Marana. And then we have our independent projects. So after the partnership, we get to the end of the partnership portion of the project, and we go independently. These are the projects that are required to get to our service area after the partnered section. So looking at the AWRDIF fund, we have the partnered portion of NWRRDS and the independent portion at the NWRRDS, and we look at all these projects, you know, we come up with our bottom number. And then also we have our Potable Water System Development Impact Fee Fund. So here again, different kind of projects, different kind of resources that we're needing to provide and to provide funding for growth. So if you look at these projects, none of these are going to be NWRRDS related. NWRRDS related projects are alternative water. So for example, steam pump D-zone well, we have a booster station, we have a reservoir, we have some interconnects. So projects required for growth, but they're utilizing different sources of supply to provide municipal water services to that growth. We take this IIP information, we gave it to our consultant, along with a lot of other information, service unit information, basically, you know, how much water do customers use now, a lot of information, and it goes into a model, and we develop our impact fees. As I had mentioned, I'm going to go two slides back here. So I was telling you about the two different funds, the AWR-DIF fund and the PWS-DIF fund. And this is our current impact fee for those two funds. So if you go to build a single-family residence here in Oral Valley, and you get a 5/8-inch meter, in total, you're going to pay $7,000.70. $4,045 is alternative water, and $2,015 is the potable water impact fee fund, for a total of $7,000 and $4,070 there, or $60. If I do my math right, 45 plus 15, 16, right? I'm an engineer, I can do that. So that's our current, and then we go through different meter sizes, and we have different user classifications. We have single family residents, multi-family residents, commercial and industrial, and irrigation. So we have these different classifications. And another very important component of doing the impact fee is, you might say, why is a 5/8-inch commercial and industrial impact fee on alternative water, why does it have a different fee than a single family residence? Or look at irrigation, a 5/8-inch meter, it has a different fee than commercial or residential. And that goes along the board here, same with the PWS-DIF impact fee. The reason being is these different user classifications have different demand characteristics to the water system. If you look at the characteristics of, for example, single family residents, you kind of have a morning peak, and it kind of dies off. Then you have an afternoon peak. Commercial and industrial kind of comes on in the morning and just kind of stays there. Very different demands, and this is the work that the consultant does, and that's where the qualified professional comes in. This is typically a computation we wouldn't do internally to the water utility. We don't have the capability to generate these types of models. But different user classifications put different demands on the system, therefore they have different impact fees per meter size.
Peter, before you move on, I'm just curious, a 2-inch connection for a single family residence, that's a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have those?
Well, since I've been here, we haven't sold a 2-inch single family residence.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around.
You know, it is possible. I mean, if you had maybe a 40,000 square foot house.
An acre house?
Yeah, it is possible.
Fine.
And here, you know, and the reason it's so high is, you have one thing to think about, and it goes for, look at commercial, we do have 4-inch commercial meters. Look at the impact fee for alternative water, $131,000. Now, here's the thing. The water system has to be able to provide the capacity to support that meter at any time. Any time, if you wanted at midnight and you open that valve all the way up, our system will give you that water. It's designed to do that. But that infrastructure is expensive. You know, if you look at our sites, we have 1 million gallon reservoirs. We have booster stations with, 5 million gallon a day capacities. If you go to our booster stations, you know, you'll see 6 booster pumps, and maybe only 1 or 2 of them are running. Those other 3 pumps are, if someone says, "I need that much water now," that infrastructure is there to do it, ready to do it. That's expensive to provide that level of service. But that's why it's that. And that's why it goes up significantly, very significantly higher per meter size, is just because of the flow capability that those meters have. I mean, an 8-inch pipe, it'll flow, an 8-inch meter will probably flow 2 million gallons a day. You know, that's a lot of demand on the infrastructure.
Yeah. Don't most of the larger commercial and industrial users also have fire suppression systems attached there. And that must set the maximum flow requirement.
Yeah, I mean, those surely can. And you bring up a good point. One of the things we do, I just thought I'd mention it in case the commission wasn't aware of this. For example, if you, your single family residence, say you need a 5/8 inch meter, we do, and the code, the statute allows us to do this. Because say you have a fire suppression system, and it's determined that you don't need a 3/4 inch meter to support that fire suppression system. If you get bumped up to a 3/4 inch meter, because only because of the fire suppression system, we still charge you just the 5/8 inch fee.
Is that only true for single family residents?
It is only true for single family residents, and it's just because of the characteristics of the flow.
And that, I believe that's part of the building code now, isn't it? Houses over, I think it's 3,000 square feet required?
I don't remember the square footage, but a lot of the SFRs we have coming through now have fire suppression systems. Also, the builders are offering that, that as one of the upgrades. Yeah. And we're supportive of it. I mean, fire suppression systems are a great idea.
Yeah.
So the next steps. I didn't get real specific here with dates or anything like that, just because we're in this aggregate impact fee development with the other town departments. I don't have a good feel for where we're going to be at and when we're going to be there. But just in general, we got to get through to staff review and acceptance. I'll provide you, the Water Utility Commission, with an update. And I'll have the commission, see like here. Hey, here's what the analysis showed. Here's what the impact fees look like they're going to be. Council will have a public hearing on the impact fees. There'll be a notice of intent to impose impact fees, land use assumptions, etc. And all of these have. There's legislative requirements for review periods, 45 days, 60 days, 90 days, that sort of thing. Again, I envision another Water Utility Commission update, probably when we get through this process, just so the commission knows what's going on. There'll be a council public hearing to consider the adoption of the fees, and the fees become effective 75 days after adoption.
Yes. How long historically have these fees been in effect?
I think it was, I think around 2000 that we've started doing impact fees.
Yeah,
that's before my time, but that sounds like that. Because one of the things I wanted to see are the historical context of impact fees, how they started, what we were using for them, how much they were. And I was looking at the previous work that was done. I think it was around 2000 is when I saw the dates that I was looking at. And bear in mind, the utility was established in 1996.
Does the statute require you to update these fees regularly? Or?
Every 5 years.
5 years. So that's why we're doing it.
Huh?
So that's why we're doing it.
That's what we're doing, yes. Yeah. Now, what we do in 2018, I did an IIP amendment. And that's because our original plan to support growth was to do additional work on the Tucson water system to a wheel additional CAP water through the Tucson water system. So our old IIP was all projects, mostly projects related to going further into the Tucson water system to make their infrastructure more robust so we could get a lot additional capacity. Since we entered into the NWRRDS IGA, our projects changed and we started doing work on that this last year. But to legally use impact fee money to pay for that work, I had to do an IIP amendment, and I did that in 2018. But so you can, the point I was trying to make is it's every 5 years, but along the way you can make amendments and changes. I went through a public hearing process on that, and so on and so forth. Yes,
I want to be sure I understand what the term aggregate means.
Yes.
When you're saying doing this in aggregate with the streets and the police department. The planning for each separate department is according to their own needs.
That's correct. And maybe I didn't pick the best word for that. We're all doing our Teichler base, Vice is doing impact fees for all the different departments at the same time, and it's going to be in one report, but we have like a section in it.
Okay, but what our needs are
for us. Yeah,
doesn't affect anybody else but us.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we, that's been some of the discussions we had. As you know, we saw a draft version, and we had a lot of questions, and it was because they were trying to, in my opinion, apply the same kind of methodology uniformly, but an enterprise fund is uniquely different. Our projects are uniquely different. And it was just about communication and discussion. But no, you're right. For the water utility, well, here it is right here. I can show you. Here we're plan based. Parks, streets could possibly be cost recovery, or even combinations of these different methodologies for calculating impact fees. But no, we're pretty much this. So yeah, within the same report, there's different methodologies for each department.
Did you say there's a maximum covered by law that you can have?
The maximum what?
Impact fee.
I think there is a maximum. I don't know what it is. I'd have to look at the statute on that.
So could that play against your impact fee because some other departments is too high?
No. Oh, sorry.
When you have the aggregate.
No, there's no maximum as far as all the groups together, kind of.
Oh,
no, okay. we're totally going to be totally separate. We're going to basically generate a new table. I think it'll be quite similar to this one. What's very interestingly enough, is although the projects have completely changed from the old IIP, the bottom dollars aren't altogether that much different. So I expect changes in each category, but when you add them up to come up with the same number, because, like, for example, say the AWR DIF fee might go up $500, but the PWS DIF fee might go down $500. I think we can expect to see lots of those kind of changes, but holistically, the end value, I think, will be pretty similar to what we have here. We'll see. No, great question. I'm sorry I wasn't clear on
Is the reclaimed water system covered under the alternative water development impact fees, or is that?
No, this. This is just our potable water system. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Ms. Peter. Okay. Item number 3: discussion on water resources utilization plan.
Thank you very much, Chair McMillan. So this presentation came about, I think, in the spring. I gave a presentation to council about our water resource utilization plan, and Chair McMillan, I think you were listening in on that, and you thought, you know, that might be something good for the commission to hear. So I went through and tried to shorten it up, and I'm ready to present it to council. So, water resources, goals, and plans. Now, here's what I loved about doing this project is it helps me, in my mind, really think about, you know, us moving forward. Thinking about plans and changing conditions and sustainability. What does sustainability mean? So here's some words that I developed. And this is how I think in my mind. So what is our water resource goal? It's to develop a sustainable working plan that addresses the water resource needs of the community while minimizing negative hydraulic, ecologic, economic, and social impacts. Water resource plans, I believe they're designed to operate. Our role is to design and operate a robust plan to ensure adaptability, resiliency, and an uncertain and changing future. Water resource plans should be capable of effectively functioning under conditions of changing supplies, management objectives, and demands. Water resource plans, you know, they may fall short, and if they do, we must adapt quickly to operate properly without undue costs. So just a brief overview. I know the commission's heard this from me 100 times, but it's important. For those folks that maybe haven't heard this before or will look at this presentation, that we kind of go through this linear approach to get to our water resource utilization plan. So what are our sources of supply? We have groundwater. And I'm going to use that acre foot term that I know this commission is well versed in, but an acre foot is approximately 326,000 gallons. Take an acre of land, put 1 foot of water on it. That's how many gallons you get. It's an agricultural term. Saves us from having to say we have a legal right to pump 4,956,000,000, that kind of thing. So we have a legal right to pump 13,384 acre feet a year. In 2018, the Oro Valley Water Utility pumped just a little over 5,500 acre feet a year. Bear in mind, there was a time when we pumped over 10,000 acre feet a year before we had reclaimed water and CAP water. We have Central Arizona Project water, CAP water. We have an allocation of 10,305 acre feet a year. Last year, we utilized a little over 7,600 acre feet of that, delivered a little over 2,000 acre feet. What does that mean? We utilized this much and delivered that much. Well, the difference between that 7,600 and that 2,094 number, that was the groundwater we replaced. We pumped that groundwater, we replaced it by storing a portion of our CAP water. So we replaced the groundwater we pumped. We delivered that much, which means if you add those two, that means we utilized a little over 6,700 acre feet. If you take the difference between 10,305 minus the 7,667, that unused portion, we stored that in underground aquifer storage facilities for future use, building up our long-term storage credits. Reclaimed water entitlement, that's another source of supply. And that depends on effluent generation, which is dependent on how much potable water our customers use. The Oro Valley Water Utility, we use all of our effluent entitlement at this time. In fact, I think in 2018, I think we had to purchase from the city of Tucson, don't quote me on this, but I think it was roughly 200 acre feet of reclaimed water because we used all of our entitlement and then some. And that's okay, we have an IGA that covers all that. I'd rather buy some additional reclaimed water than use potable water for irrigation purposes. In 2018, we delivered a little over 2,300 acre feet of reclaimed water. So what are our water resource goals? Well, our groundwater, preserve and protect existing groundwater supplies. CAP water, increase deliveries to match pace with growth. And reclaimed water, continue to utilize reclaimed water for turf irrigation. Water resource reliability, groundwater. Groundwater is a reliable supply if we limit its use to a sustainable rate. Central Arizona Project water, that's a reliable supply. As we've talked about before with the Lower Basin Drought Contingency Plan, municipalities are a priority user in the CAP system. If there's curtailments to the CAP system, municipal users are cut last. So with that being said, CAP curtailments would have to reach nearly a 50% reduction before municipal users would be affected. And that's why I feel very confident saying it's a reliable supply for us. I mean, these, as we've discussed previously, you've seen of the 1.6 million acre feet that CAP is entitled to, I think we're between 700 and 800 acre feet of cuts, almost 50% before it would affect municipalities. So I feel confident in saying it's a reliable supply. Reclaimed water entitlement depends on effluent generation. Here again, it's our water. You know, as long as that pot of water is consumed, it goes in the sewer system and effluent is generated, it's our water still, and that's a reliable supply. So I want to say something here. I think it's important. I made a little note for myself because I found the perfect words and I wanted to say them again. Okay, so the slides I'm going to show you next are the water, I'm calling it the 2019 Water Resource Utilization Plan. And the why I call it the 2019 is it's based on what I know today. It's based on, the utilization of water resources specific to future water projected shortages that may occur. This environment is very dynamic. So I'm calling it the 2019 Water Resource Utilization Plan because it's based on what we know today. It's based on the economic factors of today. It's based on the laws of today. Without further ado, let's get into it. So this is our current water resource operating condition. And all the slides have the same boxes, but what's going to change is what goes where. So here, present day water resource utilization model. So this model assumes we're at town build out, all the way to town build out. There's no empty lots. Every lot has a structure on it, and it has a use, and it has a demand on the water system. I project that the potable water demand at town build out will be at approximately 8,200 acre feet a year. My goal is to pump less than 5,000 acre feet a year, depending on the hydrology we get in the winter, in the fall, winter, and spring. That should be close to a sustainable hydrology. We continue to do work on this every year. In fact, Lee and I met with our hydrogeologist today. We're developing methodologies to really get a good understanding of what is our aquifer doing, how much water is in storage, what is a sustainable pumping rate, and not just Oro Valley, but what's happening around us, what's happening in Catalina, Oracle, what's happening to the south of that. All these things affect our aquifer. We're really trying to get a good handle on that. So in all these models, I'm assuming we're pumping less than 5,000 acre feet a year. Bear in mind, though, we have the legal right to pump over 13,000 acre feet a year. That perspective needs to be in mind. So with this model, we have enough water resources to continue replacing the groundwater we pump with CAP water while still storing water for the future. It's a sustainable model. So let's look at this. Right now, what is our wet water? Well, we get the 10,305 acre feet a year of CAP water. I'm saying we're going to use 5,000 acre feet or lesser groundwater, and we have reclaimed water. These are all deliveries. Under this existing model, you know, we're pumping groundwater, hopefully it's at a sustainable rate. We're irrigating with turf, with reclaimed water, and what's left over, we're replacing. And we're replacing the groundwater we pump. And what's left over is going towards long-term storage credits. We're storing the water in aquifer storage for future use. But look at the wet water future. Right now, the Oro Valley is a member of the Arizona Water Bank. We're storing water in our active management area. I think we have close to 600,000 acre feet stored in the Tucson active management area. That's for municipalities only. One of the things we're in discovery here is future water leases. And then these are water credits. So this isn't wet water. This is just, we call it paper water. It gives us the right to pump groundwater without having to replace it. We're a member of the Central Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District, the CAGRD. And we're also looking at for ways, we're purchasing and looking for ways to build a groundwater allowance account. What the groundwater allowance account gives us the option for is, let's say I didn't want to replace the groundwater we pumped with my wet CAP water. Said I want to put all that into storage. Well, then I could use this groundwater allowance account, just like a savings account. I could use that to replace the groundwater I pump and store all of my CAP water. This comes into the economics of operating the utility. Now, I'm not going to go too much in the weeds on that, but this operating scenario right here, it's the least expensive way to operate efficiently and responsibly, meaning at a reduced groundwater pumping rate. This is the most economical way to provide water to our customers right now. So what you're going to see change here as I go through the slides is what I basically did is I started playing with, okay, what happens if we have CAP reductions of 20%, 50%, 75%? How does the model change, the water resource utilization model? So I think I went to a 20% cut in CAP. So let's see what happens next.
And I always, ask one question.
Yes, yes.
Just so it's clear in my mind. So under this scenario, what is our long-term storage credit per year?
Between 2,500 to 3,000 acre feet a year.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Excellent question. And I knew the answer, but it makes me like that question even better.
And more question. That stored wet water we could recover and deliver through the Northwest Recharge Recovery
Absolutely.
System. Or in the future if we needed to because
that's correct.
Enough sea Excellent. Water.
Or through the Tucson Water System. So right now, yeah. We are building up long-term storage credits in Lower Santa Cruz, where the NWRRDS project will recover that water, and in Tucson Waters, CAVSARP and SAVSARP facilities. We're trying to store water in places where we can get access, where we have infrastructure to access that. Now, yes, we also store water at High Farms and Pima Mine Road, but not a lot. Not a lot. Those are for other reasons, but most of our water, we're storing it in places where we can have access to it in case there's ever curtailments in CAP water to the level that affects this model. Okay, switching the slide, you're going to see arrows moving around a little bit here. Okay, so here, this is just for the sake of discussion. If we have a 20% CAP cut, town build-out demand stays the same at 8,200 acre-feet a year. I kept the goal of pumping 5,000 acre-feet a year or less of groundwater. So here, a 20% reduction in CAP allocation, we go from 10,305 acre-feet a year to an allocation of 8,244 acre-feet a year for our use. So what happens here? Let's look at the wet water. What changed on the wet water? I'm going to go back. Okay, so the only thing that changed is we started using Arizona Water Bank water. The way the law currently is, as soon as there's a curtailment of CAP at any level, even if you don't need it, you can start taking Arizona Water Bank water. We would do that to preserve our own, to keep ourselves whole, as well as every other water provider in Southern Arizona, or Arizona in general. So let's just look at this. So what I'm looking at is, okay, we have curtailments, but we're going to start drawing our Arizona Water Bank water. And I believe, I don't remember what the percentage of Arizona Water Bank water we can take and when we can take it. I don't think it fully keeps us whole and gets us back to the 10,305, but it gets us close. But in any event, what's important is that we would start utilizing Arizona Water Bank water. And Arizona Water Bank water is in places where we have access to those wet supplies. Okay? It's not just for the credit, it's wet water. So now with this model up to a 20% reduction, we would still be replacing the groundwater we pump with CAP water. And like I said, it's because that's the most economical way to run. We don't want to use CAGRD or groundwater allowance account. It's more expensive to operate this way. This is the most economical way to operate. So we're still replacing the groundwater. We're still building some long-term storage credits. Not a lot, but still some. We'd still stay a member of the Central Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District. We'd still be working to firm our groundwater allowance account. So this is a sustainable model at town build-out with our current town boundaries.
Did you pick the 20% figure just out of the air, or was there a reason?
The reason I picked that is from after this, things start happening with groundwater allowance. This is where we're still in really great shape. But things, we start operating less economically after 20%. We're still sustainable and doable, it's just more expensive. We're gonna see that. So we're going to the next slide, and I think I went up to 50% here, so let's take a look. Okay, so here, town build-out demand stays the same. We're still pumping 5,000 acre feet a year or less of groundwater. And so here, let's look at what changed here. So all of a sudden now, depending on where, if you're at 21% or 50%, there's some, let's just say, for the sake of discussion, let's just say you're at 50%. So now, at 50%, I can replace most of the groundwater I pump with CAP, but I now have the option, do I want to start using my groundwater allowance account to replace it, or do I want to pay the CAGRD to replace it on behalf? Now it just becomes economics. It's purely economics at this point as to how you operate. The least expensive way to operate, and I didn't want to have arrows going all over the place. And I would, if we ever got to a model like this, I would have to look at how long do I think we'd be operating this way. And there's lots of factors that go into it, but I might want to take some of my long-term storage credits and do a trade with the CAGRD where I give them a portion of our long-term storage credits and they replace the groundwater with that. I might not want to use CAGRD at all. I might want to just use my groundwater allowance account. This water is less expensive than that water, but this is ours and this is someone else's. So, I mean, at this point, it's just purely economics. But this is sustainable as long as CAGRD and the groundwater allowance account exists. I really should have probably said one other thing here, as long as the money is still there. Just to give some perspective, this is just to get the resource, round numbers, CAP water, $205, $210 an acre foot, groundwater allowance account water, maybe $300 an acre foot to replace, CAGRDs, $600 to $700 an acre foot. But if money's not an object, which it always is, but let's pretend it isn't, I would use CAGRD water before we touched our water. But you know, it's expensive. There at this point, it's sustainable, but it's purely economics. Here's another thing to think about. I'm saying this to offer perspective. Bear in mind, I'm keeping our groundwater pumping at less than 5,000 acre feet a year. I wouldn't recommend it, but if we decided that, you know what, it's going to be okay to pump 10,000 acre feet a year for the next 3 years, that changes everything. We don't use CAGRD, we don't use groundwater allowance account. We can start storing CAP water again. Everything starts changing because it becomes very dynamic. When I developed this model, I kept these words in my mind, and that's why I put these words here. Ecologic, economic, and social impacts. You know, it's not just money. What's the right thing to do? And these are my opinions. But it also made the model simple, just keeping groundwater the same. Okay. Some exciting things happen here, and these are things we're working on now. Okay, so my next cut is 51 to 75%. Okay, so the only thing that changes here is now we're dipping in. So at a 51 to 75% cut, let's just call it a 75% cut. Build out stays the same. Groundwater pumping stays the same. We just have a CAP reduction. Well, what's happening is we're not able to replace all the groundwater we pump. And what's setting the tone for this is we're holding groundwater less than 5,000 acre feet a year. And if we do that, with that large of a cut in CAP, what happens is now we're starting to use some of our long-term storage credits for deliveries. So we may be only taking 2,500 acre feet a year of CAP water at a 75% cut, but I need to make up the difference between this number. Let's see if I have 8,200 minus 5,000, that's 3,200, and I'm only getting 2,600 of CAP, so I'm 700 acre feet a year short, roughly. So that 700 acre feet a year comes from long-term storage credits. But here again, it's one way to operate the model, and that's why I call it the 2019 Water Resource Utilization Plan. Depending on the pricing of what happens here, depending on what happens with Arizona water, but there's so many variables. But I just want to show you there is a plan, and it's one of, I think, it's a balance between economics, social acceptance, environmental responsibility, those sorts of things. So let's go to the next one. So here, just for fun, I'm going to call it a 100% CAP cut. Again, the demand stays the same, town build out, groundwater pumping stays the same. As you'll notice, the whole time ahead is future water leases, is future water. This is something we're working on now. Is Arizona has an allocation of CAP water of 2.8 million acre feet. 1.6 million acre feet of that is CAP. So where's the other 1.2 million acre feet? It's for on-river users, just call it agriculture. They have even a higher priority than CAP. So let's say CAP water, that 1.6 million acre feet, that's gone. Well, Arizona still gets 1.2 million acre feet a year. What happens is, and it's happening right now, there's on-river users that are saying, you know what, the price of water is such that I can make more money leasing out my allocation than I can doing agriculture. The Indian nations have literally tons and tons of us. I'm not going to say thousands and thousands. Well, some of, you know, the Gila River Indian tribes, they might have the thousands and thousands of acre feet. I don't remember what their totals are. But this is happening now. We're in discussions with agriculture and Indian tribes. I'm looking at future water leases, even if it's 1,000 acre feet. Depends on the price. Economics comes into it. So I guarantee at 100% CAP cut, agriculture's like, they'll be fighting over you to buy their water because the price will be at such a price. I mean, it won't make any sense to do agriculture anymore because you can make more money selling your allocation. So I just showed one version of what the model could look like. Is here, we have our water lease, we replace the groundwater we pump, we, you know, maybe we're not taking any, maybe CAP water goes to zero, so this doesn't happen, but then we would have this model. Now this is really, I mean, this is like a doomsday model. I don't think I'll see this in my career. I just don't see it, you know. Just if you look at the good hydrology we've had in the 1 year, we got like 3 years of out of the woods storage at Lake Mead. So I mean, but here we plan for it. I just want to show there's something, we're thinking about it, we're looking at it, we're planning for it, planning. But we did look at all the different scenarios. So with that, ensuring Oro Valley's water sustainability, here again, very important, continue to update the water resource utilization plan to ensure, very important, an adaptive, robust, and resilient plan. Is this in stone? Absolutely not. It's one solution set of literally an infinite number of solution sets. It comes down to what's economically palatable, what's socially acceptable, all those things. And we'll decide that as a community through council, town manager, and direction to the water utility. One solution set of literally an infinite number of solution sets. But none of these problems are insurmountable. Educate and provide science and fact-driven information to the community, town manager, mayor, and council. Maintain a sustainable groundwater pumping rate. Firm the utility's water resource portfolio by continuing to accrue credits. Maintain relationship with other CAP and Arizona water users, including agriculture, on-river, that 1.2 million acre feet I was talking about, CAP and the Indian nations. Continue with collaborative agreements and partnering in regional projects that bring additional sources of water supply into southern Arizona. Here, this is maintaining relationships with our water service providers, Tucson Water, Marana, Metro, Sahuarita, I mean, Green Valley, everyone. Continue the use of reclaimed water for irrigation uses. Continue to educate and collaborate with state legislators to solve future statewide water resource challenges. really neat experience. The Oro Valley Water Utility is part of the Southern Arizona Water Users Association, SAWA. State legislatures, when it comes to water issues, they tap the executive team at SAWA, which I'm a member of, as well as AMWA, the Arizona Municipal Water Users Association in Phoenix, and say, hey, what are we missing? What are the needs? Because we're the water professionals. We're the water experts. So it's real important having good folks at the state legislature that are collaborative, that are open to exploring all the options to solving problems. Keep Oro Valley relevant in the water resource discussion statewide, and that ties into the, being a member of SAWA, maintaining relationships with CAP and the board members, the ADWR, Bureau of Reclamation, all these things. Ensure water rates promote conservation and recovery cost of service. So if you take our water resource utilization model and kind of look at it graphically, this is what it looks like. So the utility was created in 1996, and for the first 10 years was solely dependent on groundwater. As I had mentioned earlier, we were close to 11,000 acre feet of groundwater pumping at one point. In October of 2005, we started reclaim deliveries. Every acre foot of reclaimed water was that much acre footage of groundwater pumped. We began wheeling a portion of our CAP water through Tucson Water System in January 2012, further reducing our reliance on groundwater. We had a phase 2 and 3. In December of 2018, we began a phase 4 wheeling. So, and then, as engineers tend to do, it's like, okay, there's my future. Well, I mean, the past wasn't like that, but that's how our I don't know what's going to happen in the middle. What's kind of interesting is if you look, we're still on a downward trend of overall consumption. I mean, I see it curving up yet. So I'm updating this every year, so stay tuned. That'll be exciting to see. And if we don't get, here I have town build out there, and that's just where it worked out when I looked at, working with planning and, how many acres we have and what is it zoned and what will it be zoned and all those kinds of things. But I don't know, it's exciting. We're thinking about it, we're planning for it, we're keeping our finger on the pulse of what's going on in the water resource community and at the state level and national level. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I hope that was helpful to you to show that we're looking at it, thinking about it, have a plan for it. Yes, sir.
The one area you didn't discuss in terms of the more drastic reductions were steps to reduce the overall town's water usage.
So,
have you given consideration that 8,200 acre feet with certain other policies adopted by the town could be reduced significantly? And it goes into the social, I think.
Let me give you some context. This number, 8,200 acre feet, that was based on a residential customer using 0.32 acre feet a year. 4 years ago, that's what the consumption was. You used 0.32 acre feet a year. As part of our impact fee analysis, we reworked all these numbers. Our typical average residential customer has gone from 0.32 to 0.28. So right there, I'm overestimating. But here again, us engineering types, right? We like being conservative.
If you're in a 75 to 100% CAP cut, that's pretty drastic, and probably you could convince the public that some drastic steps were necessary. There are a couple of things that could be done. One, things we consider not economical at the moment to adjust water consumption might then become economical, such as expanding the distribution system for reclaimed water, or actually going to the point
for example, paying people to take out swimming pools? Because my impression is that 3.2 acre foot average 4 years ago, probably less than 0.2 was actually necessary for basic life-sustaining activities. The rest of it was going into pools, irrigation, and things like that. And you have to look at the economics, I think, of providing incentive programs for people to change the way they use water versus paying huge amounts to buy water leases and things elsewhere.
Let me thank you for your question, Commissioner Mielke. You got me to think about something, and it has value. I want to add only one other water provider in southern Arizona is capable of a model that's this robust, and that's Tucson Water. Nobody else at this time has the capability of that, and that at the same time as we do. If we ever got to this point here, everybody's going to want to live in Oro Valley because we're going to be the only ones with water, along with the city of Tucson. It's that we're that progressive. We're that far ahead of everybody else.
I understand.
So, but you're right. No, you're right.
The kind of things I was suggesting don't even become possible to discuss at the lower rates of cuts. But when you get up to potentially losing the entire CAP water source,
no,
then you have to think about really changing the way we live.
And that's why it took me 2 hours last night on the couch to come up with these three bullet points. Every word here matters. Like, I don't know how many versions of this I typed up to tell the story. And you all probably tweak it again. But that's why I said this: design and operate a robust plan to ensure adaptability, resiliency in an uncertain and changing future. I'll tell you what, right now I'm living in a world that I couldn't have imagined even 5 years ago. It's better. It's not worse. It's better. There's options available. There's options available to me now that I didn't know existed. Becoming available. How about that? But that's why I picked these words. It's very important that these words are part of this presentation. It makes me cringe because I know someday I'm going to see this slide in some publication. It's like, oh, we're in trouble. Look at what, it's like, you can't just pull this slide out. It's the whole present. And that's why I put 2019. If you take it out of context, it changes everything. It changes everything. But these words are very important. This slide's very important.
The other thing I think that might be important to note is that with this variety of sources, we could stand a temporary interruption of CAP water without going to any of the more drastic results. By temporary, I mean even a year or two, by using long-term storage credits and other such things to replace it.
Let's say that the CAP canal could go out of use for our current, if we did it, still 5,000 acre feet a year, changing nothing else, we have 4 years worth of long-term storage credits. And that's not even using Arizona Water Bank. If we used Arizona Water Bank, it says to me that the options we're building into our model are really becoming literally limitless. It really comes down to social, economic. Yes, sir.
Well, the question's about the Arizona Water Bank. Could you remind us a little bit about
how
that works? Do we actually have allocated water there that's dedicated to us? And what are the costs?
So back in the day when there was excess water, okay, that's a misnomer. Basically, back in the day when people that had allocations weren't taking their allocation, okay, Arizona, CAP was taking water and shoving it in groundwater storage facilities, in Tama, in the Phoenix AMA, okay, and for municipal users. And how much, as soon as there's a curtailment, any curtailment at all, 1%, half a percent, a tenth of a percent we can draw into that account. And it's a percent, the rate you get is a percentage based on your original allocation. It's a percent, and it's per year, and I don't remember all the specifics of it, but it's a percentage of our allocation. So for example, you know, Tucson Water has a CAP allocation, I think it's like, I don't know, 130,000 acre feet a year or something. So they would get a larger percentage than we would. And I don't remember the fee structure as to,
we do pay for it.
We do, but see, we pay for it to be stored also, so I don't remember how the fee structure was put together. But it's there for municipal use. The amount you get is based on a percentage of your original allocation.
So the two parts to answer to the question is, one, yes, we're guaranteed to have water there for us.
Yes.
And two, we would pay for it, but we have also paid something to have it stored.
Yes.
Already.
Yes.
And, of course, we have to pay to move it.
Well, and that's
a beautiful different cost altogether, isn't it?
And we have the infrastructure there now to move, you know, because some of it's stored in Tucson Water facilities. We have, and with the NWRRDS, the infrastructure will be in place to utilize it. It won't have to scramble to build it. It'll be there.
And all these plans basically do presume that the NWRRDS is built and functioning.
Yes.
At the time they were planned.
Yeah, but I mean, based on just the most recent hydrology, I don't see a problem there. Well, you'll see my next report.
Okay.
Just to throw this out there, so at build out, we're estimating approximately 8,000 acre feet a year for your water use. Here's the point I want to make is, all these slides are predicated on this idea that we only want to pump 5,000 acre feet a year of groundwater. But we have an allocation, a legal right to pump 13,000,
over
which is
13.
A lot more than 8,000.
Yes.
So my question to you is, I know that we consider, I guess you would say to some degree, anything over 5,000 acre feet a year pump groundwater not sustainable? Is that the terminology we're using? Or
could you say it one more time, please?
Is pumping anything over 5,000 acre feet a year groundwater, does this utility consider that non-sustainable?
Peter Abraham considers it non-sustainable.
Okay. So how many years could we do that?
Okay. Great question. So the work that the Arizona Department of Water Resources did, you may ask, how did they come up with that number? The work, this isn't Oro Valley work. This is Arizona Department of, well, it's partially Oro Valley work, consultant work, and the Arizona Department of Water Resources determined that at a pumping rate of 13,384 acre feet a year, it would take us 100 years to dewater our aquifer. So let's say if we pumped half that, it would take us 200 years to dewater our aquifer. Excellent question. It gives good context. I'm just so, it's very important to me that when my tour here is done, that the next person that comes along goes, wow, thanks, I'm in awesome shape. And that's where I come up with this 5,000 acre feet is it sets our future up for success. But no, you're right. This ADWR says at that pumping rate, you have 100 years worth of water in the aquifer, and that's to dewater as in drain it, which I don't like that idea, but they know it's there. That's
where that terminology of 100 year shared water supply comes from.
Excellent, yes. Either I've been doing a really good job or you're doing a lot of reading. But yes, that's where the assured water, those are the assured water supply rules come from. Yeah, thank you.
The 5,000 number that you have for sustainable pumping, wasn't there a study done years back that came out with about that same number?
It's 5,500.
5,500, but right. That was actually a hydrological study that said that's where our sustainable rate is.
Yes.
I knew that number.
You have a good memory. Yeah. And the meeting that Lee and I had with a hydrogeological consultant was looking at updating that report because we've got more data. The technology's different now. to make those evaluations. So we're trying to get an idea of what that kind of work costs. And I think we're going to be able to do some of it this year, but we'll have to do some budgeting for that next year. But we really want to get we have more data now, better technology. We really want to get a grip on just what can our aquifer sustain.
Overall, I think the flexibility of that plan is, I mean, it's excellent. It gives you so many options, and like you said, it's going to come down to economics if that ever happens, and having all those different options are a great way to kind of stabilize that, what that sticker shock might be.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. I worked the earlier part of 2019 on developing that, really trying. We all knew in our mind what it looked like, but I wanted to be able to communicate it. And it's important because this presentation, I'll give this to the Community Academy in the fall. Did you understand this? Was this a good graphic? Okay.
I don't know that it would be as effective with a Citizens Academy, just because they're not familiar with a lot of the terms that we've been hearing for a few years, like the CAGRD and
it's
the wet water versus paper water and those kind of things.
You know, that's the thing with one of the things that's very frustrating is I'll be on the dais and, you know, someone asks you a question, you know, Mr. Abraham, do we have enough water? It's like, yeah, how do I explain this to you in 20 seconds? You know, or how can you ensure sustainability? It's like, you got 2 hours. You know, and I'm trying to master that craft of how do I communicate these ideas clearly, concisely. And I'll tell you what, that's what's nice about having a council liaison like Councilmember Pena. She does help with that messaging from the dais because she can say things that maybe I can't, or words that escape me at the time. So I appreciate that.
Given the relatively likelihood that some Colorado River water will still be available in the CMP, you might want, if you're talking to a general public, you might want to omit some of the more drastic levels here.
Well, and you know, and the reason I put that in there, because there will be somebody in the room that'll say, what happens when it's all gone? You know, so but I appreciate
we all die. Water is necessary for life.
Yeah. Well,
but I think you know, we could safely assume that within any planning horizon that's practical, there will be some level of Colorado River water still available to us.
I believe that too. I mean, I mean
a 20% reduction is,
you know, what do possible. I think? What do I think? I, to be honest with you, I bet you I won't even see a 20% cut in the rest of my career. I plan on having another 15 or 20 years doing this. Maybe we would dip in that. You know, it really depends. This hydrology we had this last year, I'm kind of curious, will I see that again? I mean, if we got a couple of, I don't know, we just stay tuned, right?
You're talking about in the water, river water.
Well, you'll see in the upper basin, the snowpack.
Yeah.
In the upper basin states, which is my director's report.
I'd like to second what Bob said. Having worked with public groups an awful lot over a lot of years, there are going to be some people, if you show all these slides, who are going to focus on the 100% and ignore everything else, and they'll go spread that all over the place. And so I think the advantages of giving that information, in my mind, are outweighed by the disadvantages of the fact that when you're dealing with large public groups or public groups at all, that you're just bound to get these very negative people who focus entirely on the most negative thing they can.
I know. I just don't want anybody to ever say that I'm holding something back. I'm.
Well, you can always tell them if they want to discuss it, come to your office and you'll be glad to.
And I would, I am. I would be, yeah.
Yeah, and tell them now until they understand.
We've been working really hard to be, you know, very transparent, very communicative. But I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
Yeah. It's terribly reassuring to know that you've thought this through at this level and that it's going on. I think the key points for the public is the diversity of
the portfolio
sources of water supply and the ability to readjust these in response to changes, changing conditions, such as a reduced allocation of CAP water or, for example, unusually dry circumstances here that cause our aquifer to decline a little more than you might have expected and things like that.
Well, thank you.
Just if you wanted to buffer the possibility of a very negative reaction, you could add a little bit of discussion to your slides about what would have to happen in the watershed, in Lake Mead, snowpack, for these bad things to happen. That would kind of explain that it would take a fairly substantial change in the way of things currently operate for these things to actually even start happening.
And I appreciate the feedback from this council, even or this commission. See, I upgraded them. They're council members now. Mr. Mayor.
Oh, please don't.
No, this is the commission. I appreciate the feedback. It's been great.
There's a question. If I remember right, the way the DWR calculated the 100-year water supply, if they did it for you, they did not include any recharge, right?
That's correct.
It was just a
bowl that you were draining.
Geological basin that they emptied.
Yes.
So in essence, and your say field is 5,500, and your build out is 8,000. You're about say 3,000 acre feet over. That 13,000 would last four times longer than 100 years, maybe 500 years.
Yes.
I mean, there's a built-in safety factor here. We're not even thinking about.
Well, that's how it's. Engineering folks are, right? You'd be so glad I don't design airplanes to never get off the ground.
That'd be heavy.
It'd be like a Sherman tank with wings. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks, Peter. That was very informative. Town Council meetings, communications, Council Member Pia.
Thank you, Chair McMillan. Good evening, Commissioners. And since we last had our water utility meeting, we had a council meeting, and there was a couple of items that came out of that we worked on. One of them is the council updated or had the current town policy for commissioners, or excuse me, for town council liaisons and commissions, and how we interact with one another when it comes to town council liaisons and the various commissions. And so the existing policy was kind of ambiguous as to the roles and responsibilities. So essentially what we did is we just had it cleaned up. And so in my belief, I think it just maintains the integrity of the relationship that council liaisons should have with council members and really specifies the roles and responsibilities of each. So we worked on that. And then the other item that came out of the last council meeting was in reference to golf. So the latest action that was directed to our town manager was to evaluate a 18 and 36 hole option with the potential of having a $750,000 sales tax support cap. The existing allocation of sales tax is a half a cent to the Golf and Community Center. So that report should be back to council on October 2nd. And so at that time, it's anticipated that we'll be discussing that update then. And then the council is supposed to hold an executive session meeting on Wednesday, September 11th, and that will essentially, we'll have a discussion on the Oro Valley Police Chief selection process with regards to the executive search firms. So we'll be discussing that. And then also that's on that executive session agenda is legal discussions relative to golf. So those are the main items that we've had since the last water utility meeting. One thing that I think is really positive that happened since then is the town council and a lot of our community stakeholders and representatives from the U of A, including Dr. Robbins, attended the groundbreaking for the Oro Valley Innovation Labs, which is going to be a partnership with Campus Research. So that's a big boon to our economic development, because that will kick off the biotech labs, which was a big thing we've been trying to do for a number of years. So that was a big deal to us as far as on a future basis. So that's it for the council report. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, subcommittee commissioner reports, finance subcommittee.
I think the finance subcommittee is going to meet on Monday, September 23rd. Is that correct, Danielle?
Yes.
I'll be absent that day. Just out of town. Okay. That was the only day we could seem to get everything, so we could at least have a majority there.
Okay. Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee. We had a meeting several weeks ago, and we're having another one coming up September 16th at 9 a.m. Just to follow up on what Commissioner Nelke said, we did begin a discussion in our last meeting, sort of a new discussion of where are we as a utility with our water conservation efforts. You know, Vice Chair Campbell went through some of that at the last meeting. But I think what we're trying to do is restart maybe some new discussions about what is possible going forward in the future for water conservation. Is there new initiatives we should look at? And so we're just starting that, but that's kind of the direction the committee's starting to go to right now. So we'll see where that leads. Okay, director's report.
Right, thank you, Chair McMillan. Let's start with some upcoming meetings. We have a busy time of year, it seems like. September 11th, Town Council special session. That's that's executive session only, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so okay, don't go to that, because no one will be in the room. Executive session, as Councilmember Pena had stated. September 16th, our Water Resources and Conservation Subcommittee meeting at the Water Utility Conference Room, 9 a.m. September 18th, Town Council regular session, Council Chambers at 6 p.m. October 2nd, Town Council regular session, Council Chambers at 6 p.m. And I'll send an email to the commission on this on October 11th. You know what? This looks different than my printout, but I'm okay. The Southern Arizona Water Users Association, SAWA Beyond DCP, that's the Drought Contingency Plan, the next wave of water policy. We spent like 20 minutes to come up with the name of that. You like that? The next wave of water policy? Okay, yeah, we're a bunch of geeks. That's going to be at Hotel Tucson City Center in the Gold Room. I'll have Danielle send the commission the flyer for that. That's something that it might be interesting to attend. I'm going to go.
Is that all day?
No, it's usually like
half a day,
2 or 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
In the morning. It's not an all-day thing. But I'll send the commission the flyer on that, and let me know if there's interest, and we can figure out if you want a carpool, we can figure out how to get down there together. October 14, 2019 is our next Water Utility Commission meeting. And then October 15th is our State of the Town address at El Conquistador. Danielle, can you give us an update on which commissioners we've heard from?
Yes, so I've heard that Ann Campbell will be in attendance. Let's see, Commissioner Hurt, Commissioner Hollingsworth, and Chair McMillan will all be in attendance. I understand that Commissioner Reynolds and Commissioner Murphy are unable to attend.
So we've heard from everybody then? Or?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm still on the negotiating
okay.
other things.
Okay.
I will try to come, but I'll let you know in the next week.
Wonderful. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Can I say one thing before we move on? Checking my calendar, I noticed that our next commission meeting is October 14th, but happens to be Columbus Day. And then the November 11th meeting happens to be Veterans Day. That's also a potential holiday. Are we affected by any of those holidays?
Not Columbus Day. And I believe we rescheduled the November meeting.
Did we? Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
And that's why we have Danielle, because I didn't remember that either.
Okay. But I think it's still showing up on the town website as our next meeting, November 11th.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, we'll fix that. I know I said I was only going to show this like quarterly, and I've been showing it to you like every month now, but just like...
It really makes you feel good.
You know, I don't get many of these moments. Just let me have my moment here. Okay.
So this is the snowpack in the Upper Basin States. As we know, the Upper Basin States provides the snow, the watershed for the Colorado River. And this red line is that dark red line is the median, and the small red line is the average for you statisticians. And if you remember, 2018, you want the largest area under the curve possible because that's more snow volume. 2018 was not a good year for the Colorado River system, but wow, 2019, we finished the year. You'll read reports. I've read reports here, the 130 to 140% of normal. That's been huge. I mean, that's been huge. Just taking a lot of stress off the Colorado River system. Just look at all that area under the curve there. So, even though it shows that all that snow has melted off, I've heard reports that there's still snow in the Rocky Mountains and it's still melting. So that's exciting news. In the Colorado River system, Lake Powell is before Lake Mead. And if you just look at, so Lake Powell, depending on its water surface elevation, and Lake Mead's, there's a formula that determines what the release is to Lake Mead. But I mean, let's look at Powell this time last year. I mean, Lake Powell's 20 feet higher than this time last year. So that's there's that snow melt and that runoff right there, just a tremendous amount of water, which is excellent for the Colorado River system. Then looking at Lake Mead, which determines how much water, where we are in terms of any curtailments. Last year, 2018, we were down here this time last year, and now we're getting those releases, lots of water in the Lake Mead. I mean, if we could have 2 or 3 years of that, I mean, we could fill Lake Mead again. So fingers crossed, but good news. I'll give you a break from this, maybe, until the snow starts again. That's it. Thank you very much.
Peter. Okay. Does anybody have any future agenda items they would like to propose?
More good news on the grass, the water grass, in the director's report. Keep those coming.
Yeah, we'll try.
There should be snowing up there probably by the end of the month.
Just so the commissioners, I'm trying to arrange for a guest speaker before the year's out. But we'll keep you posted on that. So you don't have to listen to me. Listen to someone else.
Okay. Call the audience and our speakers. All right. Do we have a motion on adjournment?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.